B-Pod Studios.
Thanks for starting your day with Toucher and Rich.
Why are you doing this to me?
On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
98.5 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. We got Jake Brennan, who's got the Disgraceland podcast. It's very successful. I've heard all of them now since he's been in here. And he's got a book coming out called Disgraceland, Musicians Getting Away with Murder. That's coming out on October 1st. But, Rich, you have you just saw something that made you say, whoa.
I thought Mr. Brennan here would even enjoy this. There is a music legend that it was just announced, is going to be in town signing books at the Brookline Booksmith on the 18th of this month. This is somebody, all right, Nick Bird, Dan O'Brien, our producer's not in here, Tracy, everyone on the show, I want doing everything they can to get this guy in studio. Getty Lee.
Oh, yeah.
Getty effing Lee.
Do you know what the book is?
It's probably wizardry in baseball.
No, I do know what the book is, sadly.
What is it?
It's like the big book of bass.
Oh.
And it's like he's collected, like, I've heard this in a podcast. I did the Eddie Trunk podcast.
Oh, my God.
Which is the greatest thing ever.
Oh, yeah, it's the big, beautiful book of bass.
So, dude, this is like a...
Every guitar center is going to shut down for this.
It's like, I love to collect basses.
Oh, God. Are you kidding me? And it's a coffee table book of all his basses and how he acquired them.
Is there anything funnier than turning on a random Blue Jays game and seeing his head right behind behind home plate?
Only reason to watch a Blue Jay game ever.
As he sits and reads the Silmarillion between pitches.
That's great.
As they make the pitching change, I go for my well-worn hobbit.
I mean, okay, this has to happen. Bird, Nick, everybody on the show needs to do everything they can to get Getty Lee in studio on the 18th of July.
I mean, I'll go.
Are you kidding me to meet Getty Lee? Of course I'll go there.
I'll kidnap the dude if you want.
Please do. You can get so much Disgraceland material from Rush.
I mean, that's the thing is that
they made the witch's brew.
They both poisoned Primus. So you have to. I
think the book is legitimately like $200.
Oh. Well, it's Getty Lee's big, beautiful book of bass. It's a $200 book.
That's Madonna level right there.
It might not be $200, but it's not like $30.
Okay, so it says each ticket includes, so you have to buy a ticket. Ooh, it's kind of expensive.
It's money grab.
But you get his book, so it's $90.
Oh, okay, so maybe I was off.
Yeah, yeah. It's a book signing only. Oh, we got to get him in studio. We have to get him in studio.
Get him in to talk baseball. He'll do it.
Totally. Oh, you found his, listen, look at Tracy. Tracy's on it. She already got his PR rep. I love it. I mean, because he's a huge baseball fan.
He has sold a lot of his baseball stuff in order to collect these bases.
What, does he need money?
No, stupid.
He is, well, no, he donates his baseball stuff, I should say.
Okay.
There's a story, he's like, I flew to Australia and started jamming.
Because, okay, so Rush is one of those bands that there's nothing on these guys. Like, they're like, if I'm not mistaken, because you obviously...
Well, Alex Lifeson.
You know the dark... Oh, yeah, Lifeson's had some bad
and Pirates' family died.
But that's not him doing anything wrong.
No, but that could be a Disgraceland.
Well, yeah, somebody dying, trauma, scandal can all be, if it's affiliated, we can talk about it.
And other than Lifeson, like, there's nothing on Getty, right?
I think they're pretty good guys. I think that's the MO on those dudes.
But yeah. You could do one on Pure because his wife and daughter died, and then he just rode a motorcycle, like, across the country.
But that sounds like a boring podcast.
No, because, like, the tour, forget it, you.
Atlas Shrugged.
All right. He loves Atlas Shrugged. All right, so Jake Brennan. Now, okay, so you were in bands, and you played with, like, Tommy Stinson. Who else?
You were in a band with Tommy Stinson?
No, I toured with Tommy Stinson. I opened up a tour with him.
Okay, so okay, you opened up a tour, but yeah, he was clean at the time.
No.
Tommy Stinson,
oh, really?
If people don't know,
at the
he was...
time, ever? Has he been?
Yeah, like they white-knuckled sobered at the end of The Replacements.
Oh, wow. That must have been a brief ending.
Okay, because
was he sober with GNR when he joined Axl's thing?
I don't know that he's ever been
okay.
Sober.
Yeah, because in Trouble Boys, which you should read, it's actually really good. It's about The Replacements, and when Westerberg quit, Tommy Stinson, who I guess looks at him as like a father, quit as well, but... Okay, so when you're out with Stinson and you opened up for who else? Like, there's another
Bunch of people. I mean, John Doe I toured with from X.
Yep.
Evan Dando from the Lemonheads.
Okay, so Dando's another guy. So when you're around, it's so funny you told me Stinson wasn't sober because the whole thing is I'm sober now. All right, so.
What was the name of your band, by the way?
I was in a bunch of bands. I was in a hardcore band on Victory Records. That was my first band. It was called Cast Iron Hike.
Okay.
Like similar to Helmet, very similar to Helmet.
Yeah.
We played with those guys, Quicksand, bands like that.
Oh, I love Quicksand.
Yeah, great band.
And then Quicksand stuff's great, by the way.
It is, it is. And then I was in I sort of did like an Americana album on Yep Rock under my own name, Jake Brennan and the Confidence Men. Mm-hmm. That's the band that we won the Rumble with.
That's right.
You won the BCN Rumble?
Yeah, right before you guys got to town.
Till Tuesday, still the best.
Exactly. And then I did a thing called Bodega Girls. That was the last band that I was in.
Okay, so when you look back at touring with these guys, was that part of the Disgraceland thing? Even though, you know, these guys probably haven't been convicted of murder that I know or anything like that. Like the backstage stuff, like how wild it got. Was
yeah,
that kind
of- I didn't know it at the time, but it was sort of like a master's degree in rock and roll debauchery in a lot of ways. Not so much that we were partaking in it. I mean, there was stuff that goes on, but you hear these stories that have just sort of happened that musicians have heard on the road, on the road, on the road, and that they tell to each other that over the years have seeped into sort of popular culture. But at the time, you're just like, oh, wow, that guy did that? That guy, that's what that guy's into? And you hear these whispers, and then lo and behold, wow, that is who Rob Halford is. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it kind of
comes
out later, like that type of stuff.
Who's the strangest guy that you personally saw in action?
I love him. He's an incredibly positive guy. Doesn't have a bad thing to say about anybody. Probably wouldn't even remember me, but Evan Dando's one of the weirdest dudes I've ever come in contact with.
And why is that? Because, I mean, I've heard that he's got a little bit of a reputation.
Most musicians have an MO and an agenda that they're trying to get across. They're trying to promote themselves. He's just pure musician. All he wants to do is play guitar and sing. And
but isn't
it.
That great?
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's incredible. And there's no artifice to it. There's no pretension. It's just, and he's you know, elegantly wasted the whole time that he's doing it. It's a throwback to that sort of like 60s, 70s type of rock star, most of whom have either died or cleaned up, and he's still kind of doing it.
I heard that about Mark Sandman. I know the anniversary of his death just came recently, but did you know him? Because I know you guys were obviously, you know,
he knew my dad. They knew each other well. My dad's a local musician, and my dad's band was always had kind of members of Morphine in it. So I was around when I was really young, like when I first got to the city, I was in college, and I'd see him around. I talked to him maybe once, but he seemed like a pretty serious guy. I mean, comparatively to sort of like the comedy of Evan Dando or Tommy Stinson.
Yeah. How do these guys, because I always find it kind of refreshing and it gives me a little bit of confidence. How do these guys stay alive? So like when you're around them and you're exactly my age. And, you know, how are these guys functioning? Do they seem relatively healthy?
No.
Like, is it like an emergency situation every time they get up, or what's it like with those kind of guys?
I think they've calibrated their lives to be on the road and to deal with, drugs and alcohol and the lifestyle that comes with it. Most of them, I feel like, clean up. They have to.
Right.
And then I think there's artists, like, you look at ones who are still doing it, who never get off the road, like Bob Dylan. You know, he's 70-something years old, the Stones. I mean, my theory on those guys is that they're afraid if they stop playing, they're just going to stop living. Like,
right.
They'll die. Like, it's so ingrained.
I could see that. It's like Willie Nelson's almost kind of that way. I think of that.
Right. What's he going to do?
Yeah.
You know, what's he going to go home and retire? You know, like, I don't know.
Is there a certain kind of, like, because I know guys in bands too, obviously, way bigger than you. I'm talking about the Sinatra. but is there a certain, like, you get used to life on the road and you, like you said, you calibrate your lifestyle to that. And, like, if you come home and try to recreate that, it just means trouble.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, I'm sure you guys have experienced these things as an adult kind of guy, right? These big events in your life that pump adrenaline through your body to the point where afterward, like, they can be traumatic, they can be joyful, whatever they have. You know, I've been robbed. I've been, like, you know, I've had weird things happen to me, exciting things happen to me. You go on stage in front of a sold-out show, whatever. Afterward, there's this letdown, and you just feel it's like all the emotion leaving your body. Now, these rock stars, imagine that having that happen to you every single night. You play in front of an audience of 20,000 people, and then you get off stage, and you're just a different person. Your mm-hmm. whole body changes. Now, imagine, you know, couple that or compound that with getting off the road for a year.
Right.
How are you even human? How do you come home and try to pretend to be a normal guy and go take your kid to a soccer game or whatever? I don't know how they do it. So I think they just keep staying on the road. That's their life.
Okay, so we have Jake Brennan. The true crime podcast is called Disgraceland. He's got in the Disgraceland now. And the reason I wanted to have you back is because it's not all. Even though you learn again to reiterate what a prick John Lennon was and how easily manipulated he was, but there are guys I'd never heard of that are gnarly as hell. Like artists I've literally never heard of, and I never heard their stories that are exceptionally gruesome and weird. So when we get back, we'll talk a little bit about that. Again, the book coming out is called Disgraceland Musicians Getting Away with Murder and Behaving Very Badly. We'll be back in just a moment.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Get the app. Get the Sports Hub. Get Toucher and Rich. Down. Download the Sports Hub app today.
Jake Brennan, host of Disgraceland, Musicians Getting Away with Murder and Behaving Very Badly. Now, this is you?
It's my old band, Cast Iron Height, yep.
What did you play?
I sang.
You were the singer?
Yeah.
And who was on Victory at the time you guys were, too? Was Snapcase a Victory band?
Yeah, they're how we got signed. They took us out on tour with Sick of It All.
Oh, Progression Through Unlearning is one of the greatest hardcore albums ever recorded.
That was the record. That was the record they were touring.
Oh my God. I saw them with H2O and it was one of the best hardcore shows I've ever seen.
H2O is still touring.
That was at the Point in Atlanta, it was called. Yeah. Okay. That was a unbelievable show. One of my favorite hardcore bands. That's awesome, man. Yeah. That's great that he signed you. Yeah.
Okay, so I've listened to all the Disgracelands now. And Disgraceland, again, if you don't know, it's like a true crime podcast that involves artists that you know and artists that you don't know. For instance, like Jerry Lee Lewis got away with murder, basically. And it's an interesting one. But then there are dudes that I had never heard of. So I'll ask you, what's the most disturbing one that you've done so far?
Without a doubt, the Big Lurch.
Okay.
Episode.
Who's right. The Big Lurch?
Okay. Now, I'm not going to blow up your podcast and ask you to do all your podcasts. But just whet the appetite of the audience because it was great. But... okay, so first of all, yeah, who was Big Lurch?
Big Lurch was an artist from a hip hop artist from Texas who, by way of Oakland, started to have his career, got hooked on Angel Dust, and literally ate his roommate.
Hang on, what?
So he was obsessed with Silence of the Lambs, right?
Horrorcore. Yeah. That was sort of his thing. It was right around the time of Eminem starting to happen and this sort of like horrorcore thing in hip hop, melding like horror movies with hip hop beats.
Yeah.
And he got really, really stoned to the point where he couldn't think straight and he literally tore apart his roommate and ate her and was arrested running down the street with blood and bits of lungs. Honest.
Oh my God. Was he somebody who was signed and like had a deal at the time, or was he just a dude?
He was making a record with a big producer at the time called Roger Troutman Jr., son of Roger Troutman from the funk band Zap.
Mm-hmm.
And he had been working with hip hop artists in Oakland. So he was sort of part of that G-funk scene that was happening, and he was about to take off.
And that was Angel Dust, right?
I believe it was Angel Dust.
It was Angel Dust, but then it was dipped in.
Oh yeah, yeah. It was the wet cigarettes. So they dip again to the hardcore theme. They dip the Angel Dust joints in formaldehyde.
And that was in what state did that happen?
The crime happened in Los Angeles.
Okay,
where he ate her.
But he was from Texas.
From Texas, started his career in Oakland, was recording in L.A., and that's where the murder
Because
happened.
Texas had that weird phenomenon in, like, the early 2000s with, was it the scissor that they were having? It was, like, the orange, what do they call it, purple drink, where you had that one rapper who, like, got so obsessed with God that he, like, plucked out his own eyes.
That doesn't sound
Houston,
like a codeine
wasn't
thing.
That, wasn't the name Houston, of the rapper Houston?
Houston was the big codeine syrup.
Yeah,
thing.
Right.
But okay. Codeine doesn't seem like it would have the same effect as Angel Dust dipped in embalming fluid. Like, I have smoked Angel Dust by accident, and no bueno.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the one where my friend called me, and he goes, I'm at Burger King. And I go, oh, yeah? And he goes, I go, great. And he goes, yeah, I can't leave. He goes, what the hell did you just give me? And I got in a joint from a kid that had was laced with dust and not fun.
Yeah, it
not
was
fun.
Houston was the name of the rapper from Houston.
Wow.
Yeah. And he had so much of this purple drank that he became obsessed with God and was saying, you know, what's that phrase in the if you see something evil, pluck your eye out or whatever.
Wow.
And he took it literally. There you go. I've got a new podcast
there
for you.
Go.
Pluck his own eye out. And I think that
well,
there was
like
a whole
Bushwick.
Well, there's a whole circle of guys that are like that were doing crazy stuff because purple drink was such a big deal
in
Houston around that time. But I mean, it just—I didn't realize that that someone actually ate their roommate to that extent.
Like, brutal. What do you think about, you know, the way that music is, how people kind of become famous now on the internet, and they're discovered that way, and a lot of the relationships start online and things like that. Do you think that is anything that coincides with like that kind of like ultra violence that, you know, the beating of women, there was that XXXTentacion?
Yeah, XXXTentacion.
Okay, I don't know how to pronounce his name. And so, but do you think there's something about that online culture that like kind of lends itself in this in a way?
You mean the violence part of it? I think there's an expectation sometimes, and there's, I mean, today's episode is on Cardi B, and there's, I mean, look at the stuff she's done. And
well, what has she done? Because I've seen Cardi B on there, and I know nothing about her background.
She came up as a stripper. And she blew up on Instagram, to your point. And she, from there, was brought onto Love & Hip Hop, the reality TV show. And then she got a record deal. So it kind of happened in that reverse. But surprise, the music, for what it is great. It's incredible. And when she signed to a major label, she didn't compromise the sound of anything. It's dirty. It's mean. It's her. But then she goes on Instagram and she admits to when she was a stripper, bringing dudes home to their hotel and like, drugging them, tying them up, and robbing them. And the internet sort of goes, meh, okay. You know, like they don't.
Well, it's all part of the package.
It's part of the brand, right? Oh, it's on brand. It doesn't matter.
And that's kind of a pattern. I mean, you can go back to the 50s with some of the stuff that you've done, and it's just.
Jerry Lee Lewis, the same way. The killer. Yeah.
Okay. The killer. Yeah. Yeah. Mysteriously had all these women in his life die.
Yeah.
And then the cops in the hick town didn't really care. But. What? Because it's probably hard to say, and it's probably unfair to ask you, but why do some people get away with it, in your opinion, and it's like not a big deal? Because Disgraceland features a lot of these crimes that there's really no, it didn't backfire on anyone.
Yeah, even
they
if,
got
even
away
if
with
they
it.
They got away with it legally, like in the case of someone that you were talking about, Snoop earlier.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, I love Snoop. You know, it's just I find him endlessly entertaining, or however you put it.
Yeah.
So does the world, and that's why he's constantly allowed to stay relevant in culture, despite the fact of, you know, he was there when that dude died.
Murder was the case, right?
I mean, he got away with it, and, you know, he's so charismatic that I think we're just like, okay, you know, we're riding with Snoop no matter what. On the other hand, if there's another artist who doesn't have that going for them, who just comes off like a real D-bag and people don't want to see in their daily lives, then they get cast aside. And I think it comes down to that likability thing.
Well, we were talking about the success of Bohemian Rhapsody, and the story of Queen's an interesting story. It's a good one. But then they made Rocket Man, and me not knowing a lot about the background of Elton John –
Don't diss on my boy Elton John.
I'm not dissing on him.
Yeah, I know in studio when he was at 99X.
I was able to sit in studio with him when he came up when I was up there one time. He used to
wear
short shorts, as a matter of fact.
Well, they seem to trust you.
But I didn't know the story, so I was like, okay, well, how? I wonder what this movie's going to be about. Like, what's the conflict? After doing all these podcasts, which musician do you say this would make the most unbelievable movie, this person's story?
I just finished the Led Zeppelin episode.
Oh, Hammer of the Gods is one of the best books I've ever read.
Hammer of the Gods. There's actually, I can't remember the other one I read that's better, but there's just Jimmy Page, man, was just...
He got away with everything.
They'll never make the movie, though, because of that. I mean, the stuff he did is like, go to jail for life.
No, he's a pedophile.
The stuff we know, exactly, the stuff we know about that he did.
Yeah.
Now imagine what we don't know about. And the darkness, and that's sort of the concept behind the darkness, which was I'm going to get into the occult and Satanism so that I can achieve this like insane amount of power, so my band will be more powerful than anyone else's. It's just, and then they were. It was so incredible.
Yeah,
by Aleister Crowley's house, and then you get all like, ooh.
Right. And sit on a hill and turn around and have red eyes in the movie.
How did
the
they get away with? How did they get away with making the song?
Because everyone was high when they watched it. You know, they were sick as hell when they recorded that. Like I guess everyone in the band flew. Was going around, it's
but that might be the worst movie.
I enjoyed it, man.
They were just robbed too. You know that story?
No.
Hotel was just robbed $250,000,
and they think it was an inside job.
I think it was the mafia. It just seems like a mafia thing to do
because they blamed it on what the assistant manager.
Yeah,
because they used to travel with cash.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, because the huge ass manager that used to beat
Peter Grant, who's an evil person. So okay, so you got the Zeppelin movie. I heard they're making a Rick James.
Oh, man.
That really? Should be unbelievable.
I should be making that movie, man.
Yeah, he does the Rick James.
Because people don't know the Rick James story. You want to talk about a guy who had a rough upbringing,
yeah,
first of all.
Yeah, I mean, his mom ran numbers for the mob. So that's how he got into music, because he was going to jazz clubs with his mother when he was like 8 years old to collect money. And then he ends up like, you know, running drugs for the Colombian cartel. All this is before he's a, you know, worldwide smash musician who basically invents this new form of rock and roll, this funk that he's done. He's like, oh, I'll mix George Clinton with Kiss. Bam, there it is. And completely criminal minded the whole way. Like, that's going to be an amazing, it better be an amazing movie. Oh, there's so much there.
You can't miss with that. And the thing is, too,
oh,
is
yeah,
that,
you can. They do it all the time.
Yeah, yeah, they kind of missed with the Dirt. Like, the Dirt was fine.
No, because I'll tell you, I had this argument with someone yesterday. They had editorial control of the Dirt. If they were allowed, Nikki Sixx admits to raping a woman in the Dirt, in the book.
Yeah.
See, I don't even remember that.
Yeah, he says that he was in a closet and Tommy Lee switched places with him or something like that, and now he denies it. But, I mean, they didn't even scratch the surface of that. So you can't give the artist editorial control.
So who's up next? Like, I know that you've been knocking these out, I mean, at a pretty good clip. So
yeah, every 2 weeks. So Cardi B is today, Rolling Stones, Exile on Main Street is in 2 weeks, and then season 4 launches beginning of August with 2 episodes on NWA.
Oh, on NWA. Yeah.
Very, okay. Very good. All right, Jake Brennan.
Excellent.
Thanks, guys.
He's got the podcast Disgraceland.
Am I going to see you at the Helmet Show, by the way?
Maybe.
Okay. 30 songs. They're doing 30 songs straight for the 30th anniversary.
Are you even based out of here anymore?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
North of the city.
Yeah. All right, there you go. Disgraceland. Not for long, I would imagine. iHeart's going to rob you of your soul. Disgraceland, musicians getting away with murder and behaving very badly, is going to be available August 1st. Thanks so much for the time, man. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Here are the headlines.
Listening to the station that gets you off the bench.
Things aren't going to stop just because Brady retires.
It's part of the game. It happens. You don't know what the real money is. You move on. Patriots win. Go Pats.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Brady won't throw me the ball because he has no trust in me.
Rich.
I have a super dry tongue. Look.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Now it's time to get to the stuff that we couldn't get to. It's the stack.
Nani at 5, the Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Rich, what do we got?
All right. First of all, go to @ToucherandRich, my Twitter account, because I know everyone enjoyed, well, who watched it? Everyone enjoyed the Home Run Derby yesterday. And as I said, they're going on about a 3-year streak of good home run derbies. I think it's been since they changed the format and since they got rid of Berman, it has been enjoyable.
Now, that's hand in hand.
That is hand in hand. It is absolutely hand in hand, but I thought yesterday's was fantastic. But if you want to make All-Star Week even better, you should take a look at what I tweeted out. Apparently, in the Korean Baseball League, they have a superstar bunting championship. And what they do is they have guys, there's a dude up at the plate, he's got the bat, and there's two circles that have, like, targets. It's like a giant target, and whoever can bunt it closest to the center of the square wins points. It's like two giant dartboards that they bunt it into. And the crowd's going crazy with every bunt.
You want to beat the shift? There's your competition.
Well, I have a feeling they like baseball a lot in Korea.
But the greatest,
they're willing to watch that.
Well, the greatest thing is that nobody in Major League Baseball would be able to achieve a score higher than a three on this thing.
And by the way, the pitcher is not throwing fastballs. The pitcher is like underhand lobbing it like you would to a four-year-old.
I could win that.
Yes, you could.
I mean, it's possible I could win
that.
But people in Major League Baseball, for some reason, have a ridiculously hard time doing
this. Now, listen, if they threw like 85, 80, there's no way.
No, but seriously, the guy's like, okay, Jimmy, this is the first time you've had a bat in your hand.
Yeah.
Here's a lob.
There is a chance. Well, there's a chance any of us could win it, but there is a chance that I could win that contest. Especially, you're right, Rich, against major leaguers. I think the higher you got up in quality of player, the less likely
they could do this.
You can imagine if they had, like Jose Canseco do it.
Only DHs.
No, either that or only guys that have hit 35 homers, you know?
Yeah. Oh, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
See, that now that is something I would definitely
even
watch.
Though Matt Carpenter bunted against the shift and got a double. But no one will do it.
No.
It was news. It was national news.
I watched it. I'm like, everyone should do that every time if you're not David Ortiz or, you know.
Right.
Well,
Carpenter's not a 50 home run guy.
Well, USA Today has the six best and six worst contracts of the 2019 NBA offseason. Is among the best, J.J. Redick, 2 years, $26 million. I think that he's obviously worth it. That dude has made so much money. How much did he make per year when he was with the Sixers? Was he making something close to $18 million a year or something
He signed a couple of one-year contracts. The first one he signed was for like $24 million, whatever it was. He didn't sign. I think it was 18 last year.
One of the best contracts they have, Isaiah Thomas, the one-year $2.2 million.
Who knows? Start for them.
I hope he's not broken, man. Yeah. DeMarcus Cousins, one-year $3.5 million contract. They see as a good deal. The number one worst deal of the NBA offseason, they're giving that prestigious award to the Charlotte Hornets for who?
Terry Rozier.
Yeah. 3 years, $58 million. Are you kidding?
That's insane.
The Celtics could have had DeMarcus Cousins.
I don't want him. I wouldn't have wanted him.
The Rozier contract is insane money. But getting back to Cousins, there was a groundswell. I mean, I was on vacation, but I was checking in on social media. People wanted Cousins for this team.
Dude, you did everything to change the culture back to what it was.
Crazy Rex teams.
Yep.
And if anyone has watched DeMarcus Cousins any amount of time.
It's a one-year deal where he has
to over. This year is so important to this team, especially to your guy, Jason Tatum.
And we're going
to
find out a lot about this team
The talent. In the NBA, I take the talent every minute of the day.
Now, what's worse? Well, I mean, you took the talent with Kyrie Irving, and look what happened.
Yeah, but Cousins doesn't come in as the leader of the team. I mean, Cousins comes in as someone with a cheap one-year contract.
I know, but he's also playing for a contract, which is why I'm sure he had two-year deals on the table for less money.
That's my point. He's playing for a contract.
Playing for a contract, so he's going to be surly when he doesn't get the basketball.
Oh, please. I think the other way. I think that he has to behave.
Now, as much as I think that Terry Rozier contract is awful, they have right behind him as one of the worst deals, Chris Middleton, for 5 years, $178 million. Dude, I would have paid him that. Chris Middleton, it means so much. He is so underrated on the team because he happens to be on the same court as Giannis Antetokounmpo, who's a superstar. But you absolutely have to. If they would have gotten rid of Chris Middleton,
Philadelphia would be the far and away favorite.
I don't know about far and away. Dude, I don't know anything about the East right now. Like, you don't know what any of these teams are going to be. There's like five teams.
You know Milwaukee because they have a lot of the same guys back. They lost Brogdon, which is huge.
Which is big. But everything after that, dude, I don't know if the Sixers are any better than the Celtics right now.
I think the Sixers are better. Indiana's
better
right now.
I don't even know if Indiana's better than the Celtics.
I don't know if Indiana's better, but I do know that the Sixers are better.
The Sixers are better. Milwaukee's better.
Tell me why the Sixers are better.
Well, Al Horford solves a lot of problems for them. He'll play power forward instead of center, and then when Embiid sits his 15 to 20 games, he'll move over to center.
Who shoots from the outside on that team?
Now that you got rid of Redick.
Ben Simmons. See, that's my point.
Shoots from the
There's
outside.
A lot of inside shooting, but who's your three-point shooter
they
on that
have,
team?
It'll be, who's the guy who just re-signed for $180 million? Tobias Harris. They lost a ton of outside shooting with Redick, but they improved dramatically on the defensive end of the floor.
You got rid of Jimmy Butler, their best player.
I know that.
I just don't know. I do think they're probably better than the Celtics.
No, you talk about talent. Line up the talent. Line up the talent. Celtics have a lot of what if this, if that.
No,
if
Kemba Walker is talented.
I understand that. But if you want to match the roster side by side, and the Celtics are a bunch of if this happens or if that happens, if Tatum bounces back, if Jaylen Brown can continue, if Gordon Hayward reverts back to form.
And that is true. And that is a lot of
Sixers have a lot of definite.
But that's why this year I have no idea. Like, there's not one team in the East. You know, the Bucks you could say because they have Giannis. But outside of that, there's about five teams that wouldn't surprise me would go to the Eastern Conference.
And the other
finals.
What if for the Celtics, if Enes Kanter could stay on the floor and play decent defense for 25 minutes a game?
Sixers have Joel
Embiid, one of the 10 best players in the league. Ben Simmons, who can't shoot but is still All-Star worthy.
You and I disagree about the value of Ben Simmons.
A 6'10 point guard? Absolutely. I think Ben
Simmons.
He can't
shoot.
If he could learn to shoot, he'd be the best player
on the
planet.
How many years do you give this guy to learn how to shoot?
I don't even think he needs
to. I honestly
he's a
don't
max
think it's
deal
happen
even
anymore.
Without shooting.
Yeah. I
By
don't
the
think
way,
it's gonna happen.
I've also heard that anytime a max deal is mentioned when it comes to Ben Simmons, there's a lot of eyebrows being raised. People saying, I don't know if we give that guy that. I think he's going to get it because everyone gets a max deal in this league. But I think that, as a matter of fact, there's people apparently within the 76ers organization who are hesitating when it comes to speaking of him with max deal.
No, that's true. It's interesting because I hung out with my in-laws over the July 4th break from Philadelphia. They don't care if he leaves. I mean, that's what it's come down to.
So unlike Philadelphia fans.
I know. Sure. Philadelphia fans are tough. Well, that's true.
Well, when everyone gone.
Yeah.
Well, some good news from after having a stroke. Teddy Bruschi put out a tweet yesterday, actually a post on his Instagram, that says he's doing much better. He said, quote, around 10:30 a.m. on July 4th, I lost the use of my left arm. I then tried to speak and realized I was slurring my speech. Oh, what a nightmare. As I turned to my wife, she noticed that the left side of my face was drooping. We immediately knew what was happening. These are stroke warning signs. We call 911, and the ambulance got me to the hospital. Thank you for all your kind thoughts and prayers. I'm doing much better. And then he tacked to his Instagram the warning signs of having a stroke. But, I mean, think about somebody who's gone through that before and then noticing it's happening again. How terrifying is that? But I guess because he'd been through it before, he didn't wait too long, and he was able to get the treatment that he needed enough to hopefully save him. I mean, who knows how bad it could have been. So good for Teddy Bruschi. I'm glad to hear he's back up and running. Now, I told you about the bottle cap challenge that they're doing where people are holding up a bottle and people are kicking
it,
and stuff
I'll
like this.
Do it twice.
You do it twice, slice it right down the middle.
I'll slice that son of a bitch in half. I don't care what.
Well, Justin Bieber did one, and my man seems to be obsessed with a certain something.
Yeah. This could be Tom Cruise's head.
So he's still obsessed with beating up Tom Cruise, and I don't know what the deal is and how this all started. All I know is that after he challenged Tom Cruise to a fight in the UFC, there have been real discussions between Justin Bieber's people, the UFC, Dana White, and somebody who apparently represented Tom Cruise.
Yeah, his
that's the one.
Cousin's that, nephew.
Yeah. So two of the three sides all seem to be all in on this. That's Dana White, of course, is saying this is going to be the
money. I can make money? Sure.
If you're Tom Cruise, you got to do it.
Why?
Because it's more money than you'll ever make. Oh, I'm not kidding you.
He's serious. You're not.
I'm being serious about it being if he did agree to do it. Now, would it be good for his career? Probably not.
No, would it be good for his career? What do I need to.
But for his bankroll? I bet he would make more money on this fight than he would make in any movie that he's made.
I think money is no longer an issue for Tom Cruise.
And you're probably right.
I don't think he gives a crap about this. I think he laughs at this.
Okay,
I bet you, with that weirdo, I bet you he doesn't even know about it.
So think about this.
Do you think
Floyd Mayweather made $300 million for that fight with Conor McGregor?
Right.
This would outgross that by a ton.
There are enough dumb people out there.
What are the chances that Tom... Well, I'd watch it. What are the chances... I'd pay for it. I'd pay $100 to see it.
Hell yeah, I would too.
But what are the chances... This is something that Dustin Diamond does. He fights Willis from...
when you could earn a half billion dollars for one fight.
What are the chances... Okay, I will give you, let's do this. I will give you 1,000-to-1 odds. I'll give you 10,000-to-1 odds that this never happens.
Oh, no, I don't think you'll do it. But if I'm Tom Cruise, I'm considering
that.
I'm saying you give me $500 million because Mayweather got $300, and I know this is going to outgross. This probably double the gross.
I've been told he's worth $570 million.
So okay, you could double your worth for this one stupid fight you could agree ahead of time to make it either you'd either win or make it look like that you guys both tried
really
hard.
The chances that Tom Cruise even knows of this is zero. He's in some Phaeton machine on a boat in the middle of nowhere.
Right, he's on the
I'm telling you, will promise you he doesn't know this is going on, that all he's worried about is people think his marriage is real. that's his only... Is he even married?
No, he's not. I don't think he's married anymore.
Someone's gotten a break.
Hi, this is Tom Cruise. You're listening to Rich Sherton Lead. Oh, yeah. There's nothing he can't do in a race car.
Say my name. He's the only person I've ever had to interview where I had to sign this disclaimer that said I was not allowed to alter any of his audio in any way, shape, or form.
Mm. Because you could, then you get the Thetons on you or whatever the hell the things are. Yeah, Tom Cruise ain't on the planet, right? Tom Cruise, there's a chance he might be on the moon right now.
Like, actually physically on
physically, the moon? Physically, like, on the moon. Like, Tom Cruise doesn't spend his life on Earth. Certainly not on the land.
He's in a pod somewhere?
Yeah, he's on, like, the SS Dianetics, like, you know, somewhere in the middle of the ocean.
Not to sidetrack, Tom Cruise would kill Justin Bieber. He'd kill him.
Mm. I don't know about that. Bieber seems pretty rough.
Bieber's, like, spindly. He's like a spindly guy.
I'll tell you this.
It's like a twig.
Listen, if it was shirts off... Oil, I'd take my beating. I'd pay them. Two honks.
He should listen. I guarantee you get $500 million for
that. Stephen Baldwin, good for your daughter, you Jesus freak. Well done.
Oh, dating or marry Justin Bieber?
Yeah.
Okay.
Good for him. Sanctimonious prick. Go do Biodome again, you a-hole.
Biodome's pretty good.
Oh.
Biodome was pretty good.
Whoa.
Biodome was good in a Pauly Shore type of movie.
No. Son-in-Law was great.
Son-in-Law was really good.
Biodome was on the other day.
Well, I mean, I haven't seen it in like 20 years.
I want to strangle Baldwin. He's doing a bad Pauly Shore.
Who was the one where he was? Oh, Jury Duty.
Well, Jury Duty. He talks about it. He got a three picture deal with like Paramount.
Jury Duty was so stupid.
No,
I love it.
But they were like, I'll give you, like, we're going to make this for $2 million, and like, you can't say no. He did In the Army Now,
which was good.
All right.
Who
was the biggest co-star in the Army Now?
Lori Petty, I think. Was she in
Yes, she was. All right. Who was the male co-star
of In the Army? It doesn't matter. Paulie Shore is in it. Oh, Andy Dick was in it.
That was an Andy Dick, Lori Petty.
Which equals success and laugh, spelled L-A-F-F-S.
Well, listen, he's talked enough, but he did Son-in-Law. They gave him like a three-picture deal, and it was In the Army Now, Biodome, and Jury Duty. And by the time Jury Duty came around, they were like, here's $100. Just get this out of the way.
Encino Man was good.
But that wasn't his movie. Like, Encino Man was
It was good. A movie, but he was cast in. That's not a Pauly Shore vehicle. That was a Brendan Fraser as a hunk vehicle.
Yeah, and then he... Listen, Pauly Shore, I thought, was fantastic when he was on MTV. For that time, oh, did he get laid. Hachi-machi.
He sucked on our show. He wasn't good.
He came on our show?
We had him in studio.
Hey, did we have Nick Kroll in studio?
Yeah. We've had Nick Kroll in studio. Oh, I don't know about in studio.
Yeah, because I know it's my wife's and sister.
Yeah. We have. We've had Nick Kroll in studio and definitely Pauly Shore in studio.
I don't remember that.
Yeah. Well, you weren't here, I don't think.
I can't remember.
We definitely had him here. He couldn't have cared less about anything going on around him.
Oh, well, listen, we can't all be Pauly Shore. We'll be right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' on You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
For the latest
latest podcasts, for the latest sports news, and for Toucher and Rich. Toucher and Rich. Download the 98.5 The Sports Hub app now.
Oh, yeah. 98.5 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. And it's, I believe, Hardy and Bertrand today. Now, Zolak, when he comes back, that's in until Christmas for him.
I think so. I think he is using all of his days in like a big chunk because he kind of has to.
Yeah, training camp starts 3 weeks from tomorrow. So he's got to get it all in.
Oh, are we going to start getting into things? Only so many days till football.
He already tweeted that.
It's already happened.
Yeah,
Zolak
tweeted it this morning. It was like 16 days till the Patriots reporters.
Why don't you just like countdown? Only, you know, 20 years before I die.
Exhibition, first exhibition game a month from tomorrow.
You know what sucks about this area is that September is a golden month and the pools close Labor Day. So like you have all these 80 degree days where there's no pool. Where it be where I belong to now or where it be the JCC pool closed. And then they say they can't get kids to work the pool. And I said, then don't get college kids. There's plenty of guys that didn't go to college or, God forbid, are 22 or 23 that are perfectly capable of being lifeguards. By the way, if you want the job of a lifetime, go to a country club and be a lifeguard. There's 40 of them. And all they do is sit around and, like, dive off the diving board and, like, play, slap ball.
I was the lifeguard for a pool that was the size of a postage stamp. It was the best. I know somebody, this is the best. I know somebody who is a lifeguard at the Frog Pond over at the Boston Common.
Jesus.
That might be an inch deep.
Now, do
like,
they
what
have
does to, the lifeguard do?
Do they have to sit in a chair? Because these people, okay.
See, right. I sat in a chair.
Okay, yeah. But their shifts are like 15 minutes, and then they're free for like 45 minutes.
They get up and walk around. And
I was a babysitter. I was the one who organized like sharks and minnows.
Yeah, that's not as good. It's what they got going. They got good stuff going on.
Well, I'm headed to I know you guys are jealous.
The Rooster of Death,
I'm
baby.
Rocking the Rowdy Rooster over Canobie Lake today.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
They serve alcohol there?
I don't know. I've never drank there if they do. All I know is that there's a sweet Outback between here and there. Outback and Cracker Barrel. It's
enjoy
like heaven.
That trip up 93.
It's like the Street
road.
Of Dreams.
You like Outback?
Oh, dude, their Outback salads and the Walkabout soup, awesome.
I like the Walkabout soup, but you're out of your mind if you have a steak there.
The Outback salads.
Kookaburra wings are legit.
Yeah, they are. The Queensland chicken and shrimp, I'm okay with that, too.
Interesting.
It's funny, I eat almost everything but the steak there.
Yeah, the steak's terrible.
No, the steak isn't bad. The steak is not bad.
Rich, the steak is bad. You eat at enough nice restaurants or decent restaurants.
I've eaten an Outback steak in the last year, and it wasn't bad. But I prefer to eat the other stuff on the menu.
My dad used to take me there and act like we were at Tavern on the Green.
Wow, I still think it's a big deal. I'm excited that I'm eating at Outback tonight.
Are you going to get the onion blossom?
No, I don't do that. I don't do that.
Bloomin' onion, your rube.
Come on.
Well, some places it's called an onion blossom. All right, what do you got going, Hardy?
I don't know. Oh, Nick Kroll was on your show over the phone.
Yes, I know that.
Yeah, okay. He was in studio one time.
Because I did Too Much Tuna.
That's right.
Were you there?
I went to that, yes.
I did all right.
Yes.
For as good as I was there was as bad as I was for the Chip Chipperson.
I wasn't going to say it, but that's what I was thinking. You were wonderful with Too Much Tuna.
I will say right now, I was really good in Too Much Tuna, and I was awful with Chip Chipperson.
Kroll was promoting a independent film when he was in studio, and I don't know what it was.
Was he cool?
He was great.
Was funny?
Yeah, he was great. He was very nice and very funny, and I forget what the hell
him
he was
and Mulaney were very, very nice to me. All right, but that's just dropping names. Kroll, Mulaney, performed with them.
Yeah.
Were you at Chip Chipperson?
No. I didn't even know about it. You kept that one under the radar.
Ay, ay, ay.
Yes, with good reason. He was very nervous leading up to it.
Yes, and I have every right to be nervous because I bombed the room, got some booze, didn't land a joke all night. All right.
Run derby. Starting a home run derby.
Cool.
You know what? Just ride that sumbitch to two.
That's right.
All right. That'll do it for us. Bye.
Ride her till she bucks you.
Yeah.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.